You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
I was reading about a woman named Chalice who has been given 6 months to live after the third round of chemotherapy didn't work against her stage 4 cancer, and no money left in the burial fund. She's concerned because her grandmother's going to have to foot the bill. She knows this is coming. Now, this is hard. When you're 37 years old, this is hard to do. She just started a GoFundMe page to cover the expenses, and she was stunned by the generous donations. She's going to tell her grandmother, it's okay, don't worry about it, you know, because I've got it covered. That is really pretty amazing, and it reminded me of a pastor who wrote a letter after a woman that he had been counseling and praying with fervently for months and months had gone to heaven. And he said, you know, and looking back on it, I probably should have prepared her for heaven. You know, we're so fixated on this world and this life. Sometimes it's a hard truth to think. I mean, I'm just kind of speaking for myself. Seems like we get fixated, no matter how old we are, what state we're in, we're just kind of fixated on staying here and not really think about what's coming later. But that's a really, Chalice, that's really an admirable goal, to be able to do something like that, to think ahead. And maybe we should counsel people more on and prepare them for heaven, because God has prepared a place for you through his son Jesus, right?
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the Sound of Life.
So a couple things kind of go together. I remember back in the 80s when my friend started a fitness center. Imagine that, a gym. They went out and bought a bunch of used weights and machines and stuff. And, man, we went in there after work, and we'd work out, you know, and stuff. It's great camaraderie. And when you were going home and at home, you know, you're all sweating and stuff, but you felt like $1 million. I mean, there was a peace. It was amazing because you had worked out. And now I know why it's like that. It's because your body produces endorphins, right? And that's what happens. And it's almost as well, it probably is as good as like a chemical being introduced into your body. That's how it makes you at peace. Now I know why my kids growing up were eating dirt, because they get the same feeling from that. Yes, it's absolutely true. Soil microbes, my friend, put down those Cheerios and listen. They have been found to have similar effects on the brain and are, of course, without side effects and chemical dependency as drugs introduced from the outside. Mycobacterium vacae is the substance under study and has indeed been found to mirror the effect on neurons that drugs provide. The bacterium is found in soil and may stimulate serotonin production, which of course makes you relaxed and happier and you feel better. Studies are being conducted even on cancer patients, and they reported a better quality of life and stress. I probably didn't tell them that they were eating dirt. It's probably what they did. But it answers a lot of questions of why. Maybe I did that when I was a kid, but I don't remember that. And I don't know if my kids remember that, although we joke about it from time to time. One of my sons in particular was quite fond of that. And the doctor actually said, well, it's got to have something in it that's good for his body, or he wouldn't be eating it, you know. And I said, well, that's, you know, you didn't have to change his diaper.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
You're as funny as a cry for help.
The Sound of Life.
I just love this, and I came across it recently. President John F. Kennedy, who was assassinated in 1963, said some really amazing things about our country and about our responsibility as citizens of this country. And, of course, he said, you know, our big plan is to put a man on the moon, which people must have been stunned when they heard that. A man on the moon by the end of the decade. So he was saying that, I think, in 1962. So by the end of the 60s, things were built with a slide rule. And paper and pencil and somebody's mind figuring it out. I mean, that's what they did. We're coming up on the big anniversary of the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon in July. So that just reminded me of that. But President John Kennedy was a big war hero. He was a PT boat captain, and it sank, and he ended up putting the rope in his mouth and swam, and he rescued people and all that. But he was asked how he became a war hero. He smiled and quipped, "It was easy. Somebody sunk my boat." You see, out of pain comes purpose, and out of devastation comes direction. And that, my friend, is your nutshell sermon.
Hey, this is Danny Gokey, and you're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
I was talking about a runner who's completed over 100 marathons. That's an impressive feat. One marathon is an impressive feat. But what makes him so remarkable, not only the fact that he didn't start running until he was in his early 50s, that's when he started running with a 10K with his nephew. Now he's 66, and he's run over 45 of those marathons while pushing people, young people, who have disabilities. Isn't that cool? He wants them to know the joy of running too. That is an amazing guy right there. His name is Peter Klein. There's really only like one thing you can say, isn't there, Gomer?
The sound of life.
So, you know, change can be tough for an old curmudgeon like me, used to a certain way. This is real. It's not the show unless it's like this, you know. And the circus, of course, always had the animals, and lately circuses have come under fire from people, and I guess very difficult. You got all those animals. Some of them are really big, and you know, the elephants and things, and you have to transport them and stuff, and so is it really that great for the animals, and they run a risk and things? So this circus in Germany had animal performances, and just like they all did. They've been doing that for a long time. But in the 90s, they started cutting back on the number of animals they had. And recently, what they've done is they've employed a production team. They got this idea, and they said, why don't we, through the use and technology of holograms, we can create any situation we want, practically. It happens in the middle of the stage. It's set up just like you regularly would, you know? And then the horses come out and stuff, but it's a hologram. But it's really pretty cool. Kids will love it. That's the whole thing, see? And it is incredibly entertaining, and they can do things that you couldn't do with real animals, like have a giant goldfish right in the middle floating over you. You know, it's really kind of cool. I think it's going to catch on. It's a 3D light show, basically, with 11 different projectors. And, well, you don't care how they do it. You just want to make it dazzling, right? You want a dazzling herd of horses to come right at me. Wow, it's amazing. And a giant elephant and the goldfish and stuff in the middle of the stage. It's pretty cool. There's a little video about it, about the use of the elaborate hologram light show. They are hoping that it'll be popular and entertain other audiences and other circuses as well, too. So it's kind of cool there. Whoever thought we'd be sitting down, you know, no more smell of the animals. That's what I
Well, that was exciting.
Love your broadcast. Love your show. Love the station. God bless you guys, and thank you.
The sound of life.
Pastor Samuel Rodriguez went to the border, southern border, and was kind of astonished because he didn't see what he saw did not match what was reported on the news. Now, Dr. James Dobson, a couple of weeks ago, went to McAllen, Texas border. He was invited to go there. And he was talking about the federal agent struggling to deal. It's a massive influx, as he described it, of poor and destitute human beings. They come in never-ending waves. Please believe me when I tell you that the media and some politicians have not been truthful about what is going on there. It is a human tragedy. 5,500 people show up every day in districts organized along our southern U.S. border. They arrive exhausted, ragged, walking hundreds of miles, large numbers of children, many of whom are unaccompanied. And a lot of the kids carry lice, scabies, other diseases. And they experiencing the flu epidemic at McAllen, Texas, the center there where he was that week he was there. More than 70 people of all ages are sent to local hospitals daily along the southern border. Doctors and medical staff are overwhelmed Everybody is overwhelmed. Overwhelmed is the word that describes every aspect of the effort to deal with this situation at the border. He said the most heart-wrenching experience occurred during our tour of the holding area. It's a huge gym-like building consisting of dozens of fenced-in areas. Each one is crowded with detainees standing or sitting shoulder to shoulder on benches. They stared out at us with plaintive eyes. The children looked traumatized and frightened. Tears flooded my eyes as I stood before them. They had no dolls or toys except for a few items bought by compassionate Border Patrol agents. And the week before they were there, a delegation of agents went to meet with members of Congress and begged them for additional money to buy Pampers, toothpaste, toothbrushes, and other necessities. They were turned down. The meager supplies have to be purchased with the Border Patrol, which is stretched to the limit. As there was an agent standing beside me, I asked if I'd like to speak to them. He offered to translate. He said, please tell them God loves them. Now tell them that I love them. And they smiled at me timidly. So here's the thing. You say, well, can't we just send them back? Remember I said it used to be people from Mexico coming in, and now they're from 127 different countries. They don't speak Spanish. They're from China or San Salvador. I guess that would be Spanish, but a lot of them don't speak. I mean, their native tongue, that's what they cannot be understood. And our current laws don't permit us to repatriate them to their country. We can't do that. So he said, here's something else you should know. Dr. Dobson talking. He said, I've been under the impression that these would-be immigrants try to cross the Rio Grande River and outrun or evade the agents. That's what they used to do 10 years ago. But that's not true now. They come in large groups from 100 to 400 people at a time. He says, as I write this letter, a record 1,200 people arrived together at El Paso. The refugees quickly give themselves up to agents. That's why they have made this journey. They know they will be fed, medicated, treated humanely, even if they're in holding areas while they're in our custody. They'll be released on American soil. This is the system that's been set up by the Congress and by judges. It goes back years that's set up, and they won't change it. So that's kind of the situation we're in. People are saying, you know, to do something. They generally sell everything they have. They raise between $3,500 and $10,000, and they give it to a coyote. That's their nickname. That's a guide that brings them to the border. They know what to say. They've noticed that a lot of what has said is almost scripted out. They know what they have to say to get to be, to seek asylum in the country, as I said. So it's one of those situations where it's multifaceted. Children, as usual, are the ones that are taken on the hardest. They've noticed that children have been used to come across the border. They've been recycled. Same child later comes across. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. But it's a very overwhelmed. That's the situation right there. So when you're overwhelmed, you get on your knees and you take it to the one who is not overwhelmed in that situation. And that's something we should be doing all the time. Now, and I spent a couple of minutes on this talking about it, mainly because a couple of people recently, in fact, one was on the news last night talking about the whole situation. It goes back several years, and a lot of it has to do with the way it was set up and people coming in. And so, you know, being overwhelmed, you can't just build facilities and hospitals and things to accommodate that kind of influx of people overnight, and especially when they won't be appropriate. They're having a hard time getting toothbrushes. The people, the border agents, are trained to apprehend, you know, drug runners coming over the border. Now they're cleaning toilets and feeding kids three times a day and just trying to not be hated. So maybe we ought to drop some of the things and we say and post and stuff and start praying.
The Sound of Life.
Carlos Evans, welcome to Cup of Joe Morning Show. Carlos, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm great. Happy to be here.
If I said in one word, describe yourself, what would it be?
My wife will say loving and very charming.
Ooh, well, his wife is very nice. I'm a little disappointed that Rosemarie didn't come, but that's okay.
She's listening right now back home with Nairobi, Genesis. So, love you.
All right. I had to turn the heat up because Carlos is from Florida, so he got in here and he goes, oh, man, it's only like 90 in here. Let's get the heat up. No, I'm just joking. Carlos, there is a book out about you. I'll just start right off the top, just in case you know. It's called Standing Together, which is the subtitle is The Inspirational Story of a Wounded Warrior and Enduring Love. Tell us about the warrior part. The United States Marine, you go where they tell you to go, do what they ask you to do.
That's right. I joined the Marine Corps in 2004. Okay. And I served about 8 years.
Wow. I
deployed 4 different locations from 2005 to 2009 to Iraq.
Wow.
3 combat deployments, and then in 2010, my last deployment to Afghanistan.
See, that's almost, that's unheard of. You know, from like my era, the Vietnam era, you went and did, then you got back and you were done. You know, but you deployed that many times. A lot of guys doing that.
Yes, yes.
Wow, why'd you do that?
Well, I wanted to serve my country, and at the same time, when I joined the Marine Corps, you're with your unit, you're with your friends, your buddies, you create that camaraderie, and it's something that I wanted to continue to do. So I volunteered for my last deployment.
Wow. And that was your last deployment because mm-hmm. you got hurt.
Yes, I did, yeah.
I mean, I say the word hurt, that's an understatement, really.
Yeah.
do you consider yourself, I guess now you would say, I'm blessed to be alive,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of times you go through a feeling where, I mean, you're severely hurt. Did other people lose their lives in that IED explosion?
Well, when I stepped on it, it was May 17, 2010. I was leading a foot patrol in Afghanistan.
Oh, boy.
And when we were about to end the mission, I walked about 8 steps, and I heard an explosion. And when I heard the explosion was that I stepped on IED, immediately lost both my legs above the knees, part of my arm, and I have wounds all over my body. Mm. No one else, there were minor there were some injuries in the explosion of some of the Marines and sailors that were with us that day.
An improvised
explosive device.
Device, which could be anything,
mm-hmm.
usually in the ground.
Yes.
For somebody like you to come along and just, or whoever steps mm-hmm. on.
Exactly.
Just nasty.
Yeah.
But, all right. So, that started, did you even realize what had happened when you?
When I knew something happened, but I didn't know it happened to me.
Oh.
Because my body was in shock. Because of the explosion, I didn't feel any pain. So when I saw the Marines that were surrounding me, I knew something happened. I knew that I was dying. I knew I was losing a lot of blood. My corpsmen, my medics, they were saving my life, and the Marines around me. And they were keeping me alert and speaking life in the middle of that crisis.
Wow.
I was medevaced, and I opened my eyes, I believe, 7 days after the injury. And I saw my wife, Rosemary, and Walter Reed.
So you were married then?
Oh, yes, wow. Yes. Wow. I saw my wife and Walter Reed Bautista. And she shared with me what happened to me because I didn't know.
I have heard soldiers say that that's pretty common. And they want to go back so that they can kind of release themselves from that area because they never really said whatever it is. You know, they never did a farewell.
No.
Because the next thing they know, like you said, it's days of the week later, and you're in another country.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's did you ever do that?
I
mean, I just kind of thought of that.
I was able to go back to Germany, where I was in Landstuhl. I was there for 4 days, and that's where they were taking care of me. So I was I went over there, and I met some of the nurses and the doctors and the people that were helping me and operating my body. Yeah.
Man.
It was very emotional to be there.
I bet so.
Mm-hmm. It's
about to get emotional right now. So then you didn't obviously start say, hey, I need to write a book about this.
No. No.
I mean, you laugh now, but I mean, you know, we've come a long way since then. Many years have passed. So
mm-hmm. 9 years.
What's your thought?
Well,
why didn't I just die and get it over with?
When I first opened my eyes in the hospital and realized when my wife told me what happened to me, I just wanted to die. I was happy to be alive, but I really wanted to die because I thought that not having legs, not having my left hand, having all these scars in my body, I wasn't going to be able to be the father that I promised my daughters I was going to be. I wasn't going to be able to be the husband I promised my wife I was going to be. And I wasn't going to be able to continue to serve my country, my community, my family. So I was in a very, very deep depression.
Wow. You have, of course, come out of that, and that's one reason. I mean, they don't write a book about somebody who just... right. So we'll continue that in a couple of songs. Thank you, by the way. I apologize, Carlos, for not saying right off the bat, thank you for your service. That's, you know, I even got a tweet just a few minutes ago from the USO saying, awesome. Hey, sign the card, thank the troops, it's 4th of July. So thank you in service. So we're going to learn more. It's pretty amazing. I am very honored to have you here. Thank you so much for spending just a little bit of time with us.
Thank you.
The Sound of Life.
Carlos is in the studio. Carlos Evans, former... And are you, do you consider yourself a former Marine? I guess once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine.
Once a Marine, always a Marine.
You're
shaking
your head. No, I knew that was coming. Why did I even ask that? But you were on your fourth deployment.
Yes.
When you stepped on an IED, you were leading a patrol, and you lost your leg. Legs. And I've seen a photograph with you on a prosthesis, and you don't have them today.
Yeah.
And you were telling me why sometimes you do a prosthesis, sometimes you don't.
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. It's very challenging because of my limbs.
They're very short.
Very short. Yeah, my explosion, I'm an amputee above my knees. So, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And not forget one hand.
And one hand, right. My left hand.
And so we left you at Walter Reed and you were married at the time.
Yes.
And so your wife is like, you know... What's the process? I mean, they start you like when you wake up, and then what do you do? Just besides going through all the negative in your mind, what did your wife do?
Well, we lived 2 years in the hospital.
Wow! And that's in the United States.
Walter Reed. Yes, Walter Wonderful. Yeah, Walter Reed Bethesda. And we lived 2 years in the hospital, about three months in the hospitalized, many surgeries.
Ooh, really?
Yes, many surgeries. And my wife was in D.C. with me. My two little girls were back in North Carolina where I was living. So it was trying to adjust to a new normal. We were surrounded by very, very good people. They took very good care of us, nurses, doctors, volunteers. It was a beautiful experience.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And how long did that take to come before you came out of there?
2 years.
2 years, you said 2 years.
Yes, two years. 2 years.
How's your faith tested? I mean, were you a person of faith then, going into Marines and stuff?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Wow. And I think that was the hardest part, because sometimes we believe as Christians that we're not going to go through difficult situations, that we're not going to go through sickness, that we're not going to go through hard times, because being a Christian, you know, you don't go through stuff like that. So that was my mentality. But here I am. I'm a Christian. I'm a person of faith. And now, you know, I want to die. So I'm asking myself, you know, God, why did this happen to me?
Right, right.
Where are you, God? I wasn't feeling God. I was feeling pain. So in the middle of all this, I'm asking myself, God, why me? Where are you? What did I do? And it was my faith was tested that way.
I guess it was. Oh, when you went out of there, were you spiritually healed, physically healed?
Yes. After when we left the hospital, I got an answer to my question, where was God in the middle of my pain, of my surgeries, when I stepped on that IED, when I was going through deep depression that I wanted to end my life, or I thought that I wasn't going to be able to be a husband or be a father. One day I was in my house, and I was getting ready to go to church, and I was praying, and I felt in my heart, the answer to this question, do you want to know where was God? Because we know God is everywhere, you know? We know that. But we want to know, where is God in the middle of my tears? So I got the answer to my question. God was always there. God was with my wife Rosemary, taking care of her so she could take care of me. God was with the doctors. God was with the nurses. God was with my daughters. I remember one day, my daughter came in the hospital room, Nairobi. She was 4 years old at the time. Every time I saw Nairobi, I'll cover my wounds because as men, you don't want to express your weakness. You know, you don't want people to see your wounds. So, because I thought she wasn't going to accept me, you know.
Right.
Because of my wounds, my scars. So one day she comes in the hospital room, my nurse is taking care of my wounds, and when I see her, I just start crying because I thought she wasn't going to love Poppy anymore. And the nurse asked Nairobi, "Do you want to heal Poppy's wounds?" And she came by and she started healing my wounds. And I started crying. And that was God, you know. God was God. God was with my mother, with my father, and my cousin Joel, with all the people that were surrounding me when I needed it. God is not absent from our tears. He's not absent from our difficulties. He shows up in different ways, in different manners. We just need to focus on the things that we have and not in what we don't have.
Is all this in the book?
Oh, yeah. It's in the book, Standing Together.
You're going to get an opportunity coming up. To get this, I've got a bunch of these. Thanks, Joel. I forgot. I mispronounced your name wrong. Really, I always do that. I always call him Joel.
Joel.
Yeah. The inspirational story of wounded warrior and enduring love. Standing Together is the name. Carlos Evans and Rose Marie, his wife. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the whole marriage aspect of that coming up a little bit later on. So stay tuned. Thank you.
Hey, this is Crowder, and you're listening to Cup of Joe Morning Show. It's my favorite. It's how you start your day, and your day is going to get better and better.
Carlos Evans, a bona fide wounded warrior right here. I appreciate you very much, and thank you very much, Joel, for bringing him in. Is that right? Can I call you that? Mr. Evans.
Yes, sir.
Yes, his cousin, because he lives in Orlando, but we were talking about the time he was in Afghanistan, stepped on an IED, and you lost your legs and a hand.
Yes.
Severely lost your legs, in fact, so much so that it's hard to use prosthetics, even though you have them.
Yes.
Right? So, but not today. Mm-hmm. And not most of the time, I guess.
Not most of the time.
Talking about the rehabilitation process. You knew Jesus going in as a U.S. Marine. Thank you so much. I appreciate your service. I mean, you can't say thank you. I know when people meet you in person, and then they realize who you are after just a short conversation, and they see you physically, boy, it just really must hit them. You know, this sacrifice we're talking about. You're looking at it right here. Appreciate that.
Yes. Now, I'm surrounded by very good people.
So you're being interviewed on the radio now and stuff, and maybe TV and all kinds of places. And I'm very blessed to have you here because of the book, Standing Together.
Standing Together.
And your wife is on the front, Rose Marie. It's one of those things... I guess that I know Samaritan's Purse is involved in that because they've got a big camp in Alaska.
Yeah, we were there. We were there about 3 years ago.
Mainly because of the stress that happens. A lot of marriages get in real, or they don't make it, I guess.
Yeah, it's Operation Heal Our Patriots.
Wow, why is that?
Well, being injured in Afghanistan, in Iraq, when you come back home, it's very challenging to adapt. And to continue to be the husband or the spouse that you were before. So you have to face many new things in your life. What am I going to do now after my injury? So, you know, it takes a lot of help. It takes a lot of love to grow through that experience. Samaritan Purse, Operation Heal Our Patriots, a lot of wounded couples come by and go to the retreat, and it's a growing and beautiful experience.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You did suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome?
Yes,
PTSD, I get that. Does everybody, I would think, because it's what you go through, what you experience, that's kind of a reliving it? You having nightmares and things?
PTSD, I mean... The majority of service members right now are going through suffering PTSD or going through PTSD or PTS because of the experience they have lived. There's 22 veterans taking their lives every day through suicide. So PTSD is a very, very big thing that we're facing in our nation right now.
And how'd you get through that?
Well, to me, I'm going through it every day.
Oh, wow.
I had a breakthrough in my life, and it was one day. I was in my home in my apartment room, and like I said, I was going through a very, very deep depression because I didn't love my new body. You know, here
right,
I am.
Right.
I don't have any legs. I'm missing my left hand.
Well,
and yeah, I didn't.
Yeah. Who wants to do that, right?
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
I'll volunteer.
I didn't love my body. I didn't love my life. And I didn't think it was fair for my wife to go through this with me. So I love my wife, but I didn't love myself. So when you're not happy with yourself, it's very hard to express love. So one day, I'm ready to end it. And I see my wife, and I tell her, you know, why don't you just continue with your life, and I continue with mine. And my wife looks at me, and she tells me, the difference between you and me is that I don't see any wounds in your body. I only see your scars. And I was like, you know, what do you mean by that? She's like, when the Marines came to the house to tell me what happened to you, I prayed to God and asked the Lord to bring you back home alive. Is it without legs or without a hand? I wanted to have you back home alive. And here you are alive in front of me. I love you for the man you are today and for the man you're going to be tomorrow. And I was like, you can't say that because look at all my wounds. She's like, I don't see your wounds. I only see your scars. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? My wife is a nurse as well.
Right, right.
So she says, when a patient goes inside a hospital room, he goes inside with wounds. And when he leaves the hospital rooms, you know, you can see the scars. So when I see your scars, I see who healed your wounds, and that is Jesus.
Wow.
So that was a breakthrough in my life, to see myself the way God looks at me. And the way she looked at me, I began to accept myself. So that was a big breakthrough in my life, too. You know, to continue doing my life and be able to be the father that I promised my daughters I was going to be. And to continue to serve my country, you know, my community, my family. And that the best days of my life were not behind of me, were ahead of me.
Wow.
Yeah.
You brought up some really powerful stuff. And it's in the book. It's called Standing Together, the inspirational story of a wounded warrior and enduring love. And you get an opportunity coming up, not right now, but an opportunity coming up on the Cup of Joe Morning Show to get that for yourself. You don't want to miss it. I mean, this is just packed with stuff. And if you're thinking, man, Carlos Evans, you need to be a preacher. He is a preacher.
Oh, yes.
I couldn't tell. No, but that's good, though. I'm glad that Joel, your cousin, said you preach, so that's good. And you've gone around to some pretty amazing venues.
Oh, yeah. We've been all over the world, South America, the Caribbean, Europe, Asia. I mean, the Lord has opened amazing doors that I never thought in my life that I was going to go.
That's a whole other aspect right there.
Yeah.
What you're saying?
Touching lives, leaving footprints. Today, I'm touching more people with one hand than when I had two hands.
Wow.
Today, we're leaving more footprints and more hearts than when I had feet. Because all you need to touch someone is heart and faith. So I believe that strongly.
Standing has nothing to do with having feet.
No, no.
And I want the shirt. I'm always big on t-shirts. I want the shirt. Standing has nothing to do with having feet. Now, don't tell me people wouldn't say, what is that all about? I like that. That's a new thing there, Carlos.
Yeah.
You can tell them you got it from me. That's all right. Now, there was something that interesting that happened, because we're going to run out of time. I know we are. But I just want to get you interested in the book. And I guess, you know, you get it at book places. You know, that's all. He's pointing to Joel. What do you got him?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
You got him. At J.C.'s Christian Bookstore.
J.C. Christian's Bookstore.
Yeah. There was a ski trip. I got to ask you about that. Now, not right now.
Okay.
But I just want to tease it.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
We just got a couple of minutes left with Carlos Evans, who was my very special guest. And the subject, he and his wife, Rose Maria, the subject of the book, it's called Standing Together. Now, hang on, because we got an amazing story. Now, Cecil Murphy, Carlos, helped write that. And we were just talking about Cecil. I did not recognize that name, but obviously you want somebody who knows how to write a book.
Oh, yeah.
Put those experiences together, so it's easy to read, fun to read.
Yes.
Not fun to read, but, I mean, you can't put it down.
Yeah, Cecil Murphy, he's a New York Times bestseller. He wrote Gifted Hands by Ben Carson.
Oh, wow.
90 Minutes in Heaven by Piper. So yes, he took us under his wings and he helped us make all this happen.
And I'm not making that up either. That's the word on the street is that you can't put it down once you pick it up. I want him to tell you, though, you did all kinds of things. You said you're going all around the world. You've touched more people with one hand than you did with two. You're leaving more footprints with no feet than you did with 2 feet.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But one of the things that happened after... In your process was, what is this, a snow ski strip?
A ski trip.
Mm-hmm.
In Colorado with other wounded service members from Walter Reed. It was 4 months after my injury.
4 months?
No, 6 months. 6 months after my
That's
injury.
It's not all that long, really. You're going through all those surgeries and you were in the hospital for 2 years.
Yeah, I didn't want to go, but my wife convinced me.
Oh, sure. Okay, I'll go. Well, what happened?
Well, we were there in Colorado. We were with other service members, triple amputees, quadruple amputees. They introduced me to my instructor, and my instructor saw me. The first time he sees me, he says, in a week, you're going to be skiing in the top of that mountain. And I didn't believe him. I was like, no.
Can't say as I blame you.
Yeah.
Have you been to Colorado and seen the mountains?
I never been skiing in my life. So, yeah, it was my first time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was very encouraging.
Oh, very encouraging. Yeah. So we met the next day.
Did he know you didn't have any legs?
He knew because he's obviously looking at me. But I repeated, can't you see I don't have any legs and I'm missing my left hand? And he repeated, in a week, you and your wife are going to be skiing up in the top of that mountain.
Yes.
So, yeah, we met the next day, and we started practicing. I had a mono ski, and started practicing. I fell a whole bunch of times.
Man.
But the last day, I'm in the peak of the mountain by myself, and now I'm skiing. So I'm going down the hill and skiing by myself. We finish. When I finish, there's a whole bunch of cameras, interviews, asking me about the experience. And then he comes down with my wife. And he's like, hey, how you doing, Carlos? How you doing? I'm like, yeah, I'm so excited. Yeah, I was up there. I was skiing. But then the third time he asked me how you were doing, I started crying. Because I remembered that the first time I met him, him seeing me that I didn't have any legs, him seeing that I was missing my left hand, me repeating that I couldn't be able to do this, he believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. So after that, I was like, wow, if I could do this, I could do anything that I put my mind into. I could do anything in Christ who strengthens me. So that was a very big breakthrough in my life. Someone believed in me when I didn't believe in myself.
And now you encourage people in that same way.
Exactly, yeah. I'm challenging everybody I encounter to go to the peak of whatever mountain you're facing today.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.